All rise. Court is in session. Call now 215-263-1079. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB is on. Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Court Radio. This is Dean Weitzman, also known to you and yours as My Philly Lawyer. We are joined today by my good friend, Michael Barrett, partner at Saltz Mongoluzzi, Barrett and Bendesky. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Good. It's always a good show and a good morning when you show up. You know, the last time you were here, we did an episode on medical malpractice affecting children, and that show was actually nominated for an AIR Award, which is, I guess, radio's equivalent of an Emmy. I want to thank the nominating committee for our nomination. It was quite an honor, and we look forward to another good show. So, where are we today in Philadelphia, folks? Well, it's a beautiful day. Last week it was kind of nasty, so I'm happy to report that today the sun is shining, no precipitation. If you need to get your car washed, it's a good day to do that. Rake the leaves, whatever. We have to sadly say goodbye to the Phillies. Yeah, they brought us a lot of joy this year, but the boys in red pinstripes are going to be gone until April, I guess. And those dreaded Yankees took us down. But it was an exciting year, and the good news is we can now focus on the Eagles. It was difficult to watch the Eagles when we still had the Phillies to root for. I don't know. I'm a one-horse guy. So they're taking on the Dallas Cowboys tonight for 8 o'clock Sunday Night Football. That should be fun. We say goodbye to the Phillies. Thanks for the good memories for this year. Oh, and one other thing on the sports horizon in Philadelphia. You know, I'm a graduate of Temple University School of Law. And actually, in 1979, Little Dean was a member of the Temple Diamond Marching Band. Yes, folks, if you didn't know that, I actually do have a very slight musical bone. I play the trumpet, or did then anyway, and I marched around the field with my fellow musicians, and that was the last time, 1979, the last time that Temple made it into a bowl game. Yeah, I guess they needed me for good luck. So here it was, 30 years later, and they're actually going to probably get another bowl invitation. We don't know where. In 1979, they went to the Garden State Bowl. That bowl is no longer available. It was dismantled immediately after Temple was in the bowl. I think that was it. The Garden State had enough of bowl games after that. So we're looking for the next one, and we'll see. But they've got 7 wins under their belt, which is amazing. And last week, I mean, they were like ahead, I don't know, 24 points or something against Miami, Miami of Ohio. And, of course, they came back and had to make it into a nail-biter so that the last few seconds we had to win with a field goal. But they did it, which was amazing. All right, so there we are on the sports horizon. I want to also remind our listeners that last week we were talking about a Louisiana justice by the name of Bardwell. You all remember Justice Bardwell. I told you to avoid Louisiana for the time being. He refused to perform an interracial marriage. That's right. In the year 2009, he refused to perform an interracial marriage, and the lovely young couple had to go to another justice in order to tie the knot, so to speak. And good Justice Bardwell has had to resign. So it's safe to go back to Louisiana, folks. I don't know. Maybe it was a little bit of the hubbub that Court Radio started up here in Philly. But The young couple did what I suggested. They filed suit in federal court, and the governor of Louisiana called the justice and said, son, it's time to step down. And that's what he did. He resigned. You know why? He said because he was probably going to lose in federal court. Probably, yes. That's an understatement. But now he's tending to his garden or whatever retired justices do down there, and we're all a little safer for it. So thank you for providing some entertainment, Justice Bardwell, and good riddance to you. All right. Well, Michael, you know, we're here today to talk about some issues that have come up since last week, actually. We're going to start by talking about a little bit about what happened in the election last week. You know, how quickly we forget. How quickly we forget.
Was there an election last week?
Yes, there was, unfortunately. And that exact sentiment is the reason we need to talk about this a little, because folks did not turn out. They did not turn out, because if folks turned out, we would have had some more sympathetic, empathetic-minded individuals elected who were care for us, the common people, and not big business, big enterprise. And the reason that happened, I think, is because it was a dismal turnout. I don't know, less than 20%.
Much less.
Much less.
Much less. And, yeah. And your discussion of Justice Bardwell is a good segue into this, Dean, because justices and judges and politicians wield incredible power, and that's what we're here to talk about. There was an election last Tuesday that people in Philadelphia barely recognized. You have to understand that less than half of the people of voting age register to vote in this country. Not many people know that.
So we're already starting at the 50% mark. If every single person who could vote voted, that would only be half of those who could vote.
That's right.
Let me just remind folks that as we jump off on our topic today, and we're going to beat you up a little bit because you all, everybody, well, I'm sure none of the Court Radio listeners were the ones who failed to vote, but those others who are listening who aren't regular Court Radio listeners, you failed to vote, and we got some bad elections going on here. But if you'd like to comment on anything Michael and I are talking about, you can reach us here at the studio live and in person at 215-263-1079. That's 215-263-1079. All right, so We had an election, a couple of key elections in Pennsylvania.
Yes, we did. We did. And as I was saying, unfortunately, all across the country, less than half of the eligible voters vote. Then, when there is an election without a major race at the top of the ticket, such as a presidential election or a gubernatorial election or even a mayoral election, the turnout is woefully low. Last Tuesday in Philadelphia, the turnout was 12% of the registered voters, Dean, which probably equates into 5 or 6% of the population voting and making choices and decisions that will have major impact for years to come. And the shame of it is that 95% of the people out there had no say and will have no say, but they will, unfortunately or fortunately, depending upon what happens, be the objects of this. And the most important thing, and I'm sure you agree, is to exercise your democratic rights. Make sure that you know the issues, that you're informed, ask questions, and then cast your vote. I'm going to get on my soapbox here. There have been too many people that have given their lives for each one of us to vote and for us not to vote because of a silly reason that we're too busy or it's too difficult or I don't want to wait in line is unfortunate. And we have a system whereby it's very easy to vote, and More people need and have to avail themselves of that. In Pennsylvania, there were elections to determine the remaining seat on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, 4 seats on the Superior Court. The Superior Court is the next highest court in the state, 2 seats on the Commonwealth Court, and many judgeships in each of the counties. It was a judicial election. There was also their school board members, commissioners for local municipalities. In Philadelphia, there was the district attorney's race. That was probably the most significant race between Seth Williams and Michael Untermyer. Unfortunately, that race was pretty much a fait accompli because Seth Williams' real race was this past May in the primary, where he had to beat back multiple other Democratic candidates. There's never been a Republican district attorney in Philadelphia County. And congratulations to Mr. Williams. He is the first African-American district attorney in the history of Philadelphia. He's very well qualified, and he has been an assistant district attorney. So the city will be well served with Mr. Williams. But we're looking at a situation now, Dean, where the Supreme Court is made up of 4 Republican justices and 3 Democratic justices. And what will happen after and as a result of the next census will be that a new commission in Pennsylvania will be established to determine congressional districts. And each party has 2 members on the commission, but the Supreme Court gets to appoint the most important member of that commission, the 5th person, who will vote to break all ties. Since the Supreme Court is made up of a Republican majority, it is expected and anticipated that the Supreme Court will appoint a Republican to that commission. That commission will then be a Republican majority commission, and the commission will redistrict all of the congressional districts in Pennsylvania in order to historically benefit their party. Therefore, there will be more Republican-leaning districts. This is all called gerrymandering. There'll be more Republican-leaning districts than Democrat-leaning districts. Therefore, there will be expected more Republicans in the United States and Pennsylvania House of Representatives.
If they can.
If they can.
I mean, if there's a way to cut up the pie so that they can influence elections, that's entirely what this whole process is intended to do. Allegedly to make it fairer, but we all know that it's to get more people elected at the end of the day. And the newest Supreme Court justice has made no bones about it. She's been recorded as having said, if I'm elected to the court, you can assure yourself that I will decide in favor of the Republican Party. So that's what we're faced with. But more as important as that is, there are key issues which affect you both in the criminal justice system and the civil justice system. Laws that will be enacted that will need to be decided as to their constitutionality, laws that will be decided that can go, or cases that come up that can go either way, that will either enrich your rights or deprive you of rights. And if the court is made up of individuals who don't think like you think, who aren't as concerned for your welfare as you would like them to be, then those decisions will go against you. That's the bottom line. And you know what? Those are the decisions that affect us in our everyday lives. That's why it was important to get out and get the vote out. And unfortunately, you know what happens? You didn't come out to vote. And you've gotten a justice maybe who you're not thrilled with, who will make decisions that won't go your way for how long? 10 years, a decade, 1 decade. You just gave up a seat on the court if you weren't happy with that justice or with a Superior Court judge or with a Common Pleas Court judge. You're going to live with that judge that you didn't vote for, but who will affect your life or those of your loved ones for 10 years. this is almost more important than your election of congressmen and senators who are here for 2 or 6 years, because, you know, you only get a few judges that are going to affect you for your lifetime. Each and every one is important. All right, we're going to pass it off to my girl, Tiffany Bacon.
All right, you are listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Now, if you're sitting back and you're wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, a slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice, contact the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer. With over 100 years of combined experience, they will aggressively fight for you. Call now for your free personal consultation, or rather tomorrow call them for your free personal consultation. And remember, they don't get paid until you get paid for answers to those questions and more. Simply call 215-227-2727. Tomorrow morning, call 215-227-2727 or visit them online at myphillylawyer.com. Can't wait till tomorrow. Call us right now, 215-263-1079.
Okay, thank you, Tiffany. I know that the issue as to whether or not people are going to be coming out to vote and whether we can keep people's interest through each election cycle is important. But we do have a call. We have Paulette calling from West Philly. Good morning, Paulette.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being Court Radio listener. What's your question today?
I wanted to know if I had a medical malpractice case against a dentist.
Okay. Well, give us the quick scenario, and we'll try to answer that.
Okay. Last year, well, first of all, I need to know, since this did happen last year at the end of the year, did the statute of limitations run out?
Okay.
The quick scenario is,
let me just interrupt you for 1 second and tell you that in Pennsylvania, yes, generally speaking, we have a 2-year statute of limitations. 2 years from when you knew or should have known that some mistake or error was made in your care which caused you a problem. So it doesn't sound like you're beyond the 2-year statute, so that part you're safe with. Now give us the scenario.
Okay, a dentist that I had gone to, I had a root canal done, or he started on a root canal for me. He didn't get a chance to finish it. I had missed an appointment, and I did know that if I miss an appointment, there's a fee of $50 for if I miss it. So I was willing to pay the $50 and plus the fee that I was being charged to have the root canal finished. The dentist had an attitude with me because I didn't keep my appointment, and he said that I refused to continue to work on your root canal because you don't keep your appointment. So in the meantime, I had two teeth that were together and both needed root canal, and he refused to continue to work on me. And he had also mentioned that my dental benefits may run out.
Okay, so you didn't get the root canals done, is that it?
Right, because the dentist refused to work on me because I missed an appointment.
Okay, well, there's a couple interesting issues that you raise with that. One is abandonment of a patient. Of course, the question would be, I mean, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of dentists in Philadelphia. If one refuses to work on you, then I think you have a duty to mitigate your damages. You have a duty to, and we all do, in each, whether it's an auto accident, a slip and fall, or a medical malpractice case, we as individuals have to mitigate, or if we can, lessen the damage caused by the negligent conduct. If we don't lessen the damage, then we could be responsible for our own damage thereafter. So that's called mitigation. And so the first question that a good defense attorney would ask you is, why didn't you go to another dentist immediately after the first dentist refused your treatment? And you'd have to answer that question with an answer that made sense, that had some credibility. Of course, any delay in treatment, for instance, if he strung you along and you couldn't, and you were waiting to get back in, and he told you that it wouldn't be a big deal for you to wait, but in fact the wait was a big deal, then that delay in treatment may be an action, okay? But if the delay is merely because he abandoned you and you refused or failed to get other treatment, then that may come back upon you for your failure.
Okay.
All right. So we want to make sure that when we're abandoned by our doctors, or we don't think we're getting the appropriate treatment from our doctors, that we get a second opinion or treatment elsewhere in order to mitigate our damages, so that that type of defense cannot be used against us, and so that you get the proper treatment. You know, the beautiful thing about having more than one dentist is that if one doesn't work for you, go to another. I suggest you get out there and find a dentist first thing tomorrow morning. And thanks for calling Court Radio.
Okay, I just had one final question.
I'm going to have to remind our listeners, because, you know, usually that falls upon Tiffany, but I've taken the responsibility now to be the heavy hand. There's only one question permitted in Court Radio. There is no double dipping, but there's nothing which prevents you from calling back again at another time. All right, Paulette. Peace, and have a good time today. It's a beautiful day. For those who do have questions and are not willing to double dip, 215-263-1079 is the telephone number to reach Michael and I in the studio today, where we'll attempt to answer each and every question that is posed. 215-263-1079. Today we're talking about medical malpractice. We're also talking about stuff in the court with people who aren't out for your best interests, and how to avoid that by coming out to vote. So before we get on, I wanted to talk about MedMal. I wanted to talk about a delayed diagnosis in cancer. You know, Michael, that there are a number of cancers that are substantially treatable if detected early and aggressively treated at the earliest stage possible. Forms of breast cancer, cervical cancer, ovarian cancer, testicular cancer, lung cancer, colon cancer. These cancers are all cancers that can be treated early and effectively, reducing one's exposure to the most drastic forms of treatment, and also giving people the greatest opportunity to live a normal and productive life. The key is early detection and effective early treatment. And when that doesn't happen, the chances of recovery drop drastically. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So sometimes people go in for, let's say, a lung scan, and they're going in because maybe they're applying for a job, and they need to get a physical in order to get the job, and they have a lung x-ray or a chest x-ray done, and the diagnosis is that the lungs are clear and everything's fine, and they go on to get their job, and they're working a couple years, or they're working a year, and all of a sudden they develop a cough, and they go back to the doctor, and the doctor makes a comparison with the current x-ray, which shows cancer and a growth, to the one that was done a year before when the gentleman or the woman was seeking employment. And lo and behold, the doctor says, wow, this x-ray from a year ago demonstrated a growth. It's obvious, and it should have been diagnosed a year ago. They're now diagnosed with, let's say, stage 4 cancer. And the question then comes up. Well, first, there's a couple questions. The young lady, Paulette from West Philly, raised a statute of limitations issue. Let's say it's not a year, but let's say it's 2 years and 3 months. I just told folks that there's a 2-year statute of limitations. Is this individual who discovers 2 years and 3 months later that they developed cancer back when, or they should have had a diagnosis back when they had their original x-ray, are they out of the ballpark?
Fortunately, they're not, Dean. There is an exception to the hard and fast statute of limitations known as the discovery rule. It wouldn't be fair for that patient to know that a radiologist several years before had misread or misinterpreted his or her chest x-ray. the statute of limitations, that two-year period, begins to run from the time that the patient either knew or should have known. Well, under those facts, as you describe them, the first time that the patient should have known was when the second doctor compared the films and told that patient that several years before there was a misinterpretation. So that patient has the right to pursue that claim.
All right. So if there's a delayed diagnosis, the clock essentially begins to run for the 2 years when you discover that the first radiologist made a mistake in interpreting that first film, regardless of how long ago that mistake was made.
That's correct.
All right. I want to take a call, and we're going to come back to the delayed diagnosis of cancer and the effects of the statute of limitation and other issues. But first, we're going to take a call from Anthony from Southwest Philly. Hey, Anthony, how are you this morning?
I'm fine.
You're going to ask us a question, but you just reminded me, and I'm going to tell folks that your question is regarding a bus accident. You know the SEPTAs is still on strike. I mean, this is unbelievable. It's bad enough they're striking, but it's like every 12 hours, some politician gets on TV and says, the strike is over. Get your tokens out, get your TransPass out. Well, they'll be back in a few more hours. They just got to, and then poof, it disappears. I don't think I've ever seen, I mean, I've lived in Philly my whole life, right? I am my Philly lawyer. I've been through a few strikes. I mean, I had to hoof it to school back when I was a kid because of SEPTA strike. So that's a thing that happens in Philly every five or so years. But the question is, I've never seen it where they've tricked us. They've tricked us so many times. They faked us out. They've told us it's coming, and then it's not coming. Well, the governor has been so frustrated by this that he's grabbed his $7 million off the table. Ed's taken it back to Harrisburg, and he said, I've had enough of this. Enough. I don't want to deal with these people anymore. You know, I wondered, what if the rank and file really wanted to go back to work, but their leaders in the union were not really sensitive to the rank and file's needs and just continue to strike? Well, the rank and file can't vote for an end to the strike without it being placed before them by their union leaders. Can the rank and file sue the union leaders to get them to force them to put this in front of the rank and file, to do their will, if the leaders were not really following the will of their charges? I'm not sure the answer to that. But maybe somebody else has some thoughts on that. Anyway, I'm sorry to use you like that, but I had to get into that SEPTA issue. Tell me what your bus accident question is.
My question was, I had a person that ran into the quarter panel of my front of my bus in the parking lot. She was actually on the far side of the street when she should have been on the right side of the street. But she never reported it to her insurance company. When I contact my lawyer, he said her insurance company was never aware of it, and they saying that I was at fault. So I'm trying to figure out how was I at fault when my lawyer contacted her insurance company and they never had any report of the accident.
Okay.
So yes, she's saying it's my fault.
Well, there's two issues you raise. The first issue is a failure to notify your insurance company, and that does not prove or disprove fault. So one has nothing whatsoever to do with the other. The fact that she failed to notify her insurance company is an issue which, as long as we're within the statute of limitations, talking about statutes, which is 2 years, you're fine. Her insurance company may have a qualm with her for failing to honor her contract. But as far as you're concerned, it doesn't prove or disprove fault whatsoever. What do we need to prove fault? Well, was there a police report taken at the time of the accident? Are there witnesses? Do those witnesses place blame on her for failing to stop? The fact that she's the striking vehicle certainly helps you. And in order to determine fault, we need to talk to witnesses. We need to see what the police report says, and we need to see what the actual physical damage is and the layout of the intersection. All of those things would come together to prove or disprove fault. The fact that she failed to notify her insurance company doesn't really get to that issue. And so that shouldn't be raised as proof of fault whatsoever, I guess is the bottom line. I would say that, if, you know, she should have notified her insurance company, and maybe she failed to notify them because she thought she was at fault and didn't want it to come against her her insurance. But by itself, failure to notify is not proof of fault. You need these other things, witnesses, the physical property damage, police reports, and things of that nature. But she was the striking vehicle. That goes in your favor to some extent. Beyond that, I would need to see the actual facts of the accident, and I would invite you, if you have any question or want a second opinion, to give us a call at 215-227-2727 tomorrow. And it looks like you're not going back to work anytime soon, so you'll have some time on your hands. Maybe you can stop down and see us.
Okay.
All right, take care, and thanks for calling Court Radio.
Dean, there also was talk that the Transport Workers Union strike negatively impacted the voter turnout in Philadelphia on Tuesday. So that was another unfortunate consequence of the strike.
I guess that's true. I don't know. I'm not sure I buy into that. I grew up in Philly, and, polling places are just a few, at least, back when I was growing up, they were a few steps away. You usually had the committee person running up and down the blocks, knocking on your door, saying, come on, get out and vote. And
that's a good point. However, a lot of people were saying that because of the strike, they had to leave early for work. They had to stay late. Their day was elongated and they didn't have time. But you bring up a good point about the committee person. That's, again, one of the concerns, that there are no more committee people, that politics now is on a grand scale, that media is used, television, radio, and that no one's knocking on doors reminding people to come out and vote, and there isn't that personal touch.
Yeah.
So, also, Dean, folks have a chance to vote again. Fortunately, in our democracy, there are elections every year. And in 2010, in May, there's the primary elections, and there are elections for the governor of Pennsylvania, primary elections, as well as the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate and the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, the general elections in November. So hopefully all of your listening audience will do everything they can to learn as much as they can about the candidates, become as informed as they can, so that they can vote in the primary in May and vote in the general election in November, because everyone's rights are impacted by what the three branches of government determine and decide. Each one of your callers today talks about certain legal rights, whether they be the statute of limitations, whether it be duty to mitigate. These are decisions that are made by either courts or the legislature, so that the persons who are elected ultimately decide and determine what the law is, what people's rights are, and what they're not. So it really has that trickle-down effect to every household in Philadelphia and Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. How would you like, folks, Michael and I were talking about the statute of limitations and a discovery rule. That essentially negates the statute of limitations until you discover there was negligence. How would you like to have it where there was no discovery rule, where you had 2 years to bring your claim regardless of when you found out? Well, that could happen.
And that's how it used to be?
Yeah, that could happen. And if you have the wrong people elected to office, that's what will happen. And then the Supreme Court, which, you just elected somebody to the Supreme Court, they may decide getting rid of the discovery rule is fine. It's not a problem. Go for it, legislature. Nobody's at the switch to protect you. Well, folks, you know what? Until you need that protection, you might not be thinking that it's important. But when you do need it, you want to have the right people at office. And, yeah, we're going to have we had Seth Williams on the show leading up to Seth's election, and congratulations to him for a solid win, one of the few solid wins I've seen this year. Or this election cycle. We'll have others on. Maybe we'll have Senator Spector on the show at some point. He's running for the Democratic seat for the senatorial district of Pennsylvania. And I think that we unfortunately focus on the presidential election to the exclusion of almost all other elections. And we did such good work in the last presidential election that I think it's important that we carry that through each and every election, primary and general, and to not give up our rights. Because you know what? The president is fine as the head of the country and kind of leads us in a direction, but it's these other elected offices and judges that really do the grunt work. And if they're the wrong individuals in those seats, we're in deep, deep trouble. All right. We are going to take another call, and we're going to take a call from John from Philadelphia. Good morning, John. Oh, John.
Morning.
John?
Yes.
Hi, John. How are you?
Oh, fine. Good morning. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thanks for being a listener to Court Radio. John, you have a question about an old bill from court.
Yes, I do.
Tell us a little bit about your question.
Okay. In 1993, I was in my drug addiction, and I was really bad off. I got myself cleaned up in 1996. I'd forgotten about that I had gotten arrested and had a fine. And I guess because I was so blinked out on the alcohol and drugs. But 1996, I decided to turn my life around. I got treatment, and I've been clean and sober ever since.
Congratulations on that.
Okay. The job I work at is a homeless shelter, and I used to get service there, and they hired me. I got a letter from the court saying that I had a warrant, and so I didn't know anything about it. And I went down, and they told me that I had a warrant. They showed me a picture of me of what I looked like, and it scared me. I went in, and I got arrested. I got bailed out and got a lawyer, and what happened was they put all the cases together and they dismissed all the cases against me, and they gave me a fine, which I was sort of elated that everything was behind me, and I paid the fine off. And it was just funny, a couple months ago I just happened to throw the fines and all this old mail away because I bought in a shredder. Now I just got a letter from them saying that I owe a fine from 2003, which was a case that was in March of 2003. And I tried to explain to them that I paid the fine, but I didn't have no receipts or nothing because I had shredded all the papers. And at that time, I didn't have a checking account. I wish I did, but it was a money order that I sent. I was wondering what kind of help that could I get about going about trying to find this.
Well, the answer is I'm not sure because proof is important in these circumstances,
yes.
And your failure to have proof may be detrimental to you. However, I will say that certainly you'll get further if you have an attorney who's familiar with the system make a telephone call for you. And or send a letter out rather than do this on your own. Why don't you give us a call tomorrow in the office and ask for Ken Edelin? Ken is heads up the criminal defense division of My Philly Lawyer, and he'll be happy to see if he can dig in and get this solved for you. 215-227-2727. Ask for Kenny and tell him that Dean sent you.
All right, thank you very much, sir.
All right, John, be well.
Okay.
Dean, you were talking about the delay in diagnosis of cancer cases. Over the next 3 weeks, I have depositions in three cases wherein those are the theories of liability. Two of the cases involve failures to timely diagnose and treat lung cancer involving women who had routine serial chest x-rays that, for whatever reason, there were early abnormalities, very early cancers that were not timely detected, diagnosed, and treated. Unfortunately, several years later, these women began to have symptoms. They went back to their doctor, and unfortunately, the cancers were diagnosed at late stage, and both of them are terminal.
So these women are they're not in all likelihood going to survive their disease. And if it had been diagnosed at its earliest stage, when the first chest X-ray was done, when the first signs of cancer appeared, then there was a substantial likelihood that they would have survived their disease. And that's really what we're talking about, folks. We're talking about going from a good outcome to a bad outcome, a good outcome to a terminal outcome in this delay. And we're not talking about a delay of 2 weeks or two, even maybe a couple months. That's not going to necessarily change your outcome. I get calls all the time about, you know, I went to the doctor in April and they said I was fine. And then I had to go to the emergency room in June and I found out I had a problem. Well, that's fortunate. And I'm glad it was caught in June. But 2 months does not make a malpractice case. There has to be a long enough period, a long enough delay where the circumstances have so drastically changed that it's clear that that delay has caused you to have serious problems. That's the kind of delay we're talking about. Am I right?
That's correct. And there's a general rule of thumb when it comes to oncology. That's the study of cancer. Most oncologists will tell you, based upon their education and their experience in the literature, that if it's less than 6 months, unless it's an incredibly fast or rapid growing cancer, that the impact will not be any different. So hopefully, you know, if there has been a delay for the patient, it's a very slow growing cancer, and that there will be some discovery within that 6 month window.
But if, folks, if you know someone or you yourself suspect that there may be a delayed diagnosis of greater than 6 months, then please give us a call at 215-227-2727 first thing tomorrow morning.
And that's only with cancer, Dean, with that long period of time. There are other conditions and situations where time is of the essence and days or weeks are significant.
For instance?
Well, if you're talking about vision, blindness, things like that, if there is any delay in the diagnosis and treatment, we have a case now where we're taking depositions this week, and all of the harm occurred within less than a month. And had there been a timely diagnosis and treatment, this young lady would still have her vision. Unfortunately, she doesn't now. So
there are certain illnesses and diseases which require very prompt and effective diagnosis. But with regard to cancers, most cancers grow slow enough, except for some, that a six-month or less delay, in all likelihood, will not change the outcome for the individual. I have a question, though. You know, we have this MCARE statute. Well, before we get on to the MCARE statute, I'm going to take another call. We have an anonymous caller from Northeast Philly, and I just tell all the other listeners, if you're trying to get into the studio to get a question asked and answered, call 215-263-1079, 215-263-1079. All right, we have an anonymous caller from Northeast Philly with a case against the city and a question.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for being a listener.
Thank you. I have a question about, you know, my child. She was injured at a community event that was sponsored by a city-run agency. Now, I contacted a lawyer, and I know it's a city-run agency just from firsthand knowledge, but as he said, he's going to get information in reference to who runs this agency. But in the meanwhile, I was told that because it was a city event, and it was supposedly by a city-run agency. And if that's the case, that the city has some type of limitation that you can't sue for negligence?
Well,
an extreme case of negligence?
No. It doesn't have to be an extreme case of negligence. But what it has to have is it has to have the right type of injury, because the city is protected by an immunity statute. And so there's a couple of things that have to occur with a claim against the city that's not the same as individuals or private parties. For one thing, the city generally has immunity. That means that you can't sue the city for their negligence unless, and then there are certain enumerated exceptions to the immunity statute. If it's a defect to real property, for instance, if the city is controlling some piece of land and the land is in a dangerous and dilapidated condition and the dangerous condition caused an injury, then you can sue the city. If the city is operating a motor vehicle and in the process of operating that motor vehicle, they cause you injury from their negligence, you can sue the city. If it does not fit into one of the enumerated exceptions, it doesn't matter how negligent they are, you can't sue the city. And so, for instance, negligent supervision would be a cause of action you could bring against a private party. For instance, if your child is in daycare and the daycare center does something negligent which causes your child to sustain an injury, you could bring a cause of action against the daycare center for their negligence. If the city were running a daycare and it was city employees, you could not sue them for negligent supervision. That's not a cause of action that the city is subject to liability for.
No matter how extreme the injury is.
And the second part of any city case is that you do need to sustain a serious and permanent injury or loss of bodily function, which is a term of art, which, you know, it has to be more than just a run-of-the-mill, you're injured for a short while but get better type of injury. And so these are some of the differences when suing the city versus a private party. And by the way, just so I can segue back into our discussion regarding judicial nominations, these are the kinds of laws which take away rights from you as an individual, which are created by the legislature and enforced by the courts. And if we don't have the right legislature or the right courts, those laws will continue to eat away at your civil rights. That's so important for us to keep that in mind at each and every election. I'm sorry I didn't have better news for you. And I'm not sure, you know, we didn't really get into the specific facts of what's going on with your child. But I hope that things work out, and the best of luck. And thanks for being a loyal Court Radio listener. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Wow. 215-263-1079. I want to go back to our discussion regarding delayed diagnosis in this regard. We have something which, again, the legislature enacted in Pennsylvania and the courts have enforced, and that, or they're beginning to enforce, that's called the MCARE Act. It was a statute enacted to provide some protection for doctors. And in so doing, I suppose one could argue it's a statute enacted that deprives individuals of rights that they had prior to its enactment. Would you agree with that?
I would generally agree with that, Dean.
Okay. So beforehand, before the MCARE, if there was any connection at all to the city of Philadelphia with the medical treatment, we could bring the lawsuit right here in the city of brotherly love. Yes. Now, it's much more difficult to do that. And if the treatment was rendered, if the negligence was rendered in a county other than Philadelphia, even though the doctor may have some connection to Philadelphia, he may have offices in Philadelphia, he may see patients in Philadelphia. In fact, he may have seen that patient in Philadelphia. But if the negligence, if the act of negligence was performed in a county other than Philadelphia, we have to bring that claim in another county. That's bad for you folks in Philly for a number of reasons, not the least of which is we have a very efficient court system here in Philadelphia. We are like the shining example of court systems in the entire Commonwealth and the entire United States. We move our cases with efficiency and effectiveness. Guess what? Unfortunately, they don't do that in Montgomery County. Montgomery County is a place where cases go to die. I'm sorry, judiciary of Montgomery County, but you just don't cut the mustard here on Court Radio. Cases can be out there for years and years and years before they come before a jury of not your peers, but the peers of the doctor. And what happens? Doctors want cases in Montgomery County because they know they'll go on forever and plaintiffs will lose the enthusiasm to bring that claim. So anyway, this is the MCARE statute. This is why we have to have the right elections. But in regards to the MCARE statute, and before I jumped off on my soapbox, forgive me for that, but what happens nowadays, a lot of our x-rays are sent abroad. Did you know that, ladies and gentlemen? You get an x-ray done at the x-ray place in your neighborhood. That x-ray is sent via the computer to Bangladesh. And in Bangladesh, a radiologist reviews your x-ray and shoots back via the internet an opinion to your doctor as to what that x-ray shows. Nobody here in the United States, no local doctor has seen your x-ray. And let's say that there was a misdiagnosis or a failure to read that x-ray appropriately. How do you get the Bangladesh doctor into a courtroom? Where do you get them? What happens in that case, Michael?
Well, that's a good question. Good question, Dean. That's a problem. And the problem starts with a total absence of communication between the medical facility, the physicians, and the patient. I would venture to guess that most, if not all, of the patients have no idea that a person, and I say person because none of us have the opportunity to vet whoever it is that's interpreting those x-rays. It may well be that that person is a physician.
And for listeners, for vet, check out, look under the covers and make sure that who you're dealing with is who they say you're dealing with.
Because we don't know who's reading those x-rays. It may well be that it is a physician who has studied radiology and who is licensed and certified, but it may not be. And in a situation like that, what has to happen is that the patient will have to bring a lawsuit against the facility in where the x-ray or whatever the radiology study was read or interpreted, and possibly there'll be the name of a physician who is actually employed by and at that facility, and it'll be the burden of that facility to defend the case. And fortunately, the patient, if the patient had no reason to know that there would be someone outside the United States who'd be interpreting the film, the patient wouldn't have the duty and responsibility to sue that.
Okay.
That physician.
Thank goodness for that, because, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any doubts, you have no rights in Bangladesh, okay? It's not happening. Forget about it. You don't want to be there. And you know what? We have listeners. We have a whole, crowd of listeners down in Jamaica every Sunday who call in sometimes. Last week we had a lovely gentleman from Spanish Town. We may have listeners in Bangladesh, and if I've offended you, please forgive me. But, we want to bring our lawsuit and our doctors to the bar of the court here in Philadelphia for Philadelphia patients. Before I move on to questions from listeners, and we are running a brief on time as normal, I need to hear from our girl Tiffany Bacon.
If you're sitting at home and you're listening to us and you're wondering what to do if you've been injured from an automobile accident, slip and fall, work-related mishap, or medical negligence, call the attorneys at Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Don't you give it a second thought. You can call for a consultation. Remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. They have over 100 years of combined experience. Let them aggressively fight for you. Just call them tomorrow morning at 215-227-2727 or visit their informative website at MyPhillyLawyer.com.
What a voice that girl has. All right, real quick, we're going to talk to Kathy. Kathy, airport section.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, just ducky with this strike going on.
Yes. What's your question?
But my question is regarding, can a lawyer file a motion if a person is found dismissed or not guilty? Can a lawyer file a motion at that time to have the record eradicated or eliminated, not expunged? Because I was telling a neighbor that I had heard somewhere that this could be done because he's young and he doesn't know. And he's, whatever was made up about him, it was dismissed or he was found not guilty. Shouldn't that because it's going to affect his college application if he doesn't get that record taken away. Can a lawyer motion?
No. The appropriate action is to file a petition for expungement of the arrest record.
That's the only way, because it still leaves a black mark, and people want to know what happened.
No. If the petition is granted, and it should be, if it was just an arrest and not a conviction, then it will not be a black mark. It will be gone, and he can then answer all college applications that I've never been arrested. He does not need to reveal that if the petition for expungement is granted.
So that's the only term, expungement.
That's the term.
The only term, right?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, thank you for listening.
You're the greatest.
Thanks. All right, we're going to pick up on Marvin. Marvin.
Hey, Dean, good morning. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, I'm going to let you ask your question real quick, but I want you to forgive me for failing to MPL you, and you're going to get my Philly lawyer pack. You know, I usually send it by bus, but they've been on strike, so... You're gonna get it this week, though, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
What's your question, Marvin?
Just real quick. We're going back to about a month ago. You said your friend had a property and a renter, a deadbeat, and he wanted him out. How did that go about? How did that turn out? If I offer, say, that 1 month's rent, do I put that in their hand once every piece of article was out of that house?
You bet.
Okay.
You do a walkthrough that day with the place empty. You get the keys. You lock the place up, and you hand them their money. That was a tip from Larry R. You know,
right,
who is a slumlord. I mean, a property owner in Philadelphia, and he always got his people out because he didn't deal with the courts. He just went in, paid them a reasonable sum, and everybody made out better that way. Marvin, thanks for being a loyal listener. I hope you get your tenant out of there promptly, and
yes,
you will get my Philly Lawyer's gift pack this week, and I hope you wear it proudly.
Ah, thanks.
All right, peace.
All right.
All right, we're running low here, Mr. Barrett, and as usual, we've gotten some great calls. What's our last little word of the day here about elections? Oh, and I just want to prime the pump. Michael will be back in 2 weeks, where we'll pick up where we left off. Yeah, I'm ham tying him here, folks, because you know, Mr. Barrett's a busy man and has an active social life to boot. So he's not always around, but yeah, he's made a commitment, and I know he always honors his commitment. So we'll see him again or hear him 2 weeks from today.
And I'm looking forward to it, Dean. I think the most important thing is for all of my Philly Lawyers listeners to be proactive in their medical care, to be proactive in their exercise of their rights. Ask questions. Don't just accept an answer. Follow up, whether it be to learn more about their candidates, whether it be to learn more about their medical condition. Don't take no for an answer. Get that second opinion, as you said earlier, and know and understand their medical condition and their records, because clearly, excuse me, with both of these issues, time is critical, and you don't want to waste time.
There you have it, folks. The last word from Michael Barrett. You know, you've learned a couple words today. Mitigate your damages, vet your doctors, and make sure that your treatment is in the city of Philadelphia. With that, we're going to hand you off to Philly Speaks with my friend E. Stephen Collins, who's sauntering into the studio.
How did you recover from the Phillies' loss? I know you were devastated.
Yes, I'm all over the Phillies. I have to thank them for giving us some joy in Mudville this year. And I'm really looking forward to now being able to get behind the Eagles. I couldn't do that while the Phillies were still in play. I'm a one-trick pony, you know.
It's like trying to pay attention to Beyonce and Holly Berry sitting in your living room. You know, it's like,
Wait a minute.
I want a winner.
All right. So there you got it. Right. We're 30 seconds away from E. Stephen Collins and Philly Speaks.